trustworthy, loving good words, helpful. Oh, mercy indeed, yes. Respect. Now, there's a good word. Okay. Yeah, respect. Yeah, sometimes we need some. Yes. Forgiving. Oh, mercy indeed, yes. Did I see another? No. All right. I'm sorry, what? Non-judgmental. Yes. Yep. Very good.
Devoted.
Yes, devoted. Devoting. Yes. Yep. Yeah. Good listener. Yes. Yeah. Uplifting. Yes. Compassionate. Excellent. All right. All these good words. Oh, that we could be all of these things, huh? Yeah. I guess I don't know how to put it in one word, but this kind of like when you're comfortable with silence is one of the things, you know. So you know you've got a good friend when you don't have to keep talking all the time, you know, when you can just be with one another, you know, that would be another sense. All right, well, those are all good words. Little trivia time now. There, as we think about friendships, we're going to draw this loop back together. There are two stories in the Gospels. So the Gospels are those four books about Jesus, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. There are really only two stories that are contained in all four of those Gospels. Okay, we might think that there's more, and there's certainly a lot of overlap between the first three Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. John was written in a different sense. But there are two broader stories that are... anyone like to take a guess at either of those stories? I'm sweetening the pot here. You can figure it out. I have an authentic $2,000 bill. All right, so here's a hint. Now, we have any of our young... all the kids have left. Okay. All right, so we celebrated one of those two stories not too long ago. What's that? Resurrection, there you go. $2,000 bill. All right, very good. Don't spend it all in one place. It would cost you about that much money to get to where you have to go to spend that, and then you wouldn't be able to buy a cup of coffee. So not worth too much, but it's fun. All right, the second one is a little tougher. In fact, it's probably any Jeopardy fans here? Okay, we got a guess. Maria, got a guess? No, actually. Nope, and we would think, that's a good guess, we would think that the birth, well, of course, the ministry is a broad subject, but we would think that the birth of Jesus would be in all of the Gospels because of the great importance that we place on it, but actually, it's not. It's found in how many of the Gospels? How many? Two, right, two. And for $2,000, what two? There you go. I'm out of $2,000 bills. Okay, so I was going to give, but I don't think anyone will get this one right anyway, because it's one of those, like, really? So the other story that is contained in all four of the Gospels is the story of Jesus feeding the multitude, feeding the 4,000, the 5,000, you know, like one thought 4,000, one like had to, oh no, had to be five, you know, so whatever that would be. So those are the two places, or the two stories that are found in all four of the Gospels. Ooh, am I going to run out? Nope. Okay. So it's in the sixth chapter of John then, and at first I was going to talk about the friendships of Jesus, because as he calls the disciples, as Nancy read for us, you know, I would say that points to the fact that he cultivated these relationships, you know, with these people. So he was one who cultivated friendships with folks before he finally said, okay, you know, this what I've been talking about, we're now gonna bring this all together, and we're gonna launch a movement, or whatever language he would have used. And so he called the disciples at that point. But as we look then at a different story, it really struck me how friendship came into this other story, the feeding of the 5,000. So you may know the story. It's getting late in the day, and Jesus and the disciples had been out, and Jesus had been just kind of like unloading all this good teaching on them. And at some point, somebody says, well, you know, we should just call it quits. The people are getting hungry. It's getting late. And someone else said, well, yeah, but, you know, just think, if we could just feed everybody. And somebody else said, well, you know, to feed everybody here, you know, it'd take, just to give everybody a bite, it would take like half a year's wages. And so it was at that point then that Andrew, and this is found out of the four stories, it's only found in John's telling of the story, he says, Andrew speaks up and says, hey, there's this boy, and he's willing to give all of his food to the cause. Now that there was a boy willing to give his food is found in all of them, but it's Andrew, it's only in John's gospel that Andrew is pointed out as saying he kind of introduces this boy to everybody. And so as I thought about that, it was like, well, Andrew must have cultivated a relationship or a friendship with that boy to the point where he was then willing to give everything that he had brought that day over to Jesus. Now, I have to admit, when I have thought about that story over the years, you know, the key players in that story, Jesus, the boy, the 4,000 or 5,000, but really, as I began to think about it for this week, this whole thing might not have taken place were it not for this relationship that Andrew cultivated. Andrew took the time to speak to him. You know, there's this mass of people, and an adult takes time to talk with a child. Second story about friendships. Nancy read for us the relationship of a man named Paul, but prior to that, he was known as Saul. And that's such an important relationship. So kind of the backstory of that is the reason it's so important, because Paul would, out of his relationship with Barnabas, end up being the quintessential evangelist of the day. He was the one who would take the gospel across Turkey and across Greece and all of Rome, and he did it by foot. There was no Uber to call up. There was no trains, planes, automobiles. There was no publications. There was no internet. And all of that evangelizing, all of that telling the story could not have taken place were it not for the friendship that Barnabas had extended to Paul. So how did that happen? That's the rest of the story, right? So Saul becomes Paul as a result of this dramatic conversion experience. At least that's what Saul is claiming. And as we go back, if we had time to read all the story. But there were those who were thinking, well, they weren't sure that Saul was simply making up this conversion story because he was going to play them for a sucker. Because Saul was this guy who was a zealot to persecute the Christians, right? He was the one who was imprisoning them. He was the one who was beating them. He was the one who in sometimes was killing the Christians out of this great exuberance of his faith. He was a Jew's Jew, and they were blaspheming God by some of the things that they were saying about Jesus. And so now all of a sudden, this guy has a conversion experience. And they're like, I'm not so sure. Because they were worried that he was looking really to get into the Christian leadership team to find out who else he could arrest, who else he could persecute, who else he could put into jail. Suddenly, he has this come to Jesus moment in his life. They weren't so sure. Was it some kind of a trick? Was he really just trying to find out more about the movement. That's what's on their minds. And I would say, fair enough. That's what they all believed, except one, Barnabas. It was Barnabas who ended up befriending this man named Saul. Saul was his Hebrew name. When he finally was converted to Jesus, then he took a Greek name, Paul. And it was Barnabas who befriended Saul so that Saul could become Paul and Paul could write what we know to be half of the books of the Newer Testament. And by befriending him as Saul, he brought him into the leadership team there in Jerusalem, where he met James, the brother of Jesus, and the other key leaders in the church. And who in that household ever could have imagined the difference that this man would go on to make for their time and for our time as well? And how close was he to being excluded from that experience? Was it not for one man entering into a relationship with him, a man named Barnabas, who most of us, we don't even know his name all that well? Friendships can do that. The illustration Jesus would use would be, it's like a faith the size of a mustard seed. You know, it starts off small, but then this huge branch or this huge bush grows out of it. I think that today more of us would relate to the story of a pebble being thrown into a pond. You know, if the pond is all calm and you throw a pebble into it, you know, it's just a small little bit, then the rings ripple out. Friendships can grow in ways that we can never imagine. When we think of the great virtues of the church, we talk about love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, those kind of things, those sky-high principles, those ways of living, everything. Oh, friendship? You know, maybe we think of friendship as being lightweight when we compare it to love and courage or integrity. There seems to be a certain robustness about those words. But friendship, I mean, as I thought about it, I really haven't even talked about friendship on a Sunday morning that I can remember. And perhaps it's been much to our detriment as faith communities that we haven't spent more time on that. Because we know, don't we? We know in our guts the power of friendships. It's not a lightweight virtue. I mean, we think about children's books. I mean, all the great books, you know, so often there's that theme woven through them about friendship. I mean, I remember as a kid growing up, I had a stuffed rabbit. And so, boy, that story of the Velveteen Rabbit, that really resonated with me. Or Frog and Toad, you know, their great relationship that they have. Or music, how much our music talks about friendship. I grew up listening to Country Joe Cocker singing, you know, "All with a Little Help from My Friends," you know, at Woodstock. Or James Taylor, "You've Got a Friend." Or if you're a country music is your flavor, you know, Garth Brooks singing, you know, "You've Got Friends in Low Places." Movies, Thelma and Louise, The Toy Story, Harry Potter, Finding Nemo, Forrest Gump, Bridesmaids, you know, all of those. You know, it's just friendship is a part of what we look for in life. It's not a lightweight virtue. This call to be a friend is something we need to take seriously, just as Barnabas took it seriously in Saul's life, just as Andrew took it seriously, he did as well. Now, think with me again about Andrew. He went against the norm of society as he reached out and befriended that little boy. There was an enormous prejudice against children in Jesus' time. Children were viewed as weak and there mainly to accommodate the whims of whatever an adult would want. Charles Dickens, Oliver Twist comes to mind, but am I the only one that grew up in a house that heard that children are to be seen and not heard? Oh, I think some of you have heard that as well. So what an impression Andrew must have made on that unnamed little boy. how appreciative he was. An adult paid attention to me. It just made him stand a little taller. It moved him so that he was like, here, take what I've got. I'm so impressed with what's going on around me. This man's up there talking and you're paying interest in me. Just take it. I've got some bread and I got some fish and you do with it whatever you want. I'm glad to give it away. You know, I think there are people in our lives who, if we were to take time with them, that they're just as hungry, just as open, just as interested in having someone come alongside of them and be a friend. There are people in my life, and I'm sure yours as well. One more way of looking at that story would be that Andrew reached out to someone who he wasn't supposed to, from the adult's perspective, right? And there are people who feel like they don't fit in our culture as well. Their clothes aren't the same as ours. They might not have the same education or traditions. The color of their skin might be different. Their accent would give them away, or perhaps their inability to speak very good English at all. They might have a different sense of sexuality about them. Their approach to life just might be totally different, and out of that then they feel out of it. And in some people's perspective, they are. I had a conversation one time, when people come to the house to fix something, or even, I think Dan would acknowledge, I'm always nosy, you know, when somebody's fixing something, because I don't know much about those things, I'm kind of a nosy person. And so someone came to the parsonage one time a while back, and so I was right, you know, having a conversation with them, and you know, one thing led to another, and we started talking about, you know, accessibility of guns and, you know, some of those areas where it became pretty clear that we didn't share the same opinions about things. But we had this really nice conversation. And at the end of it, he says, "You're not going to call the shop, are you, and, like, tell on me that we've talked about this?" And I wonder, So I said, why would I think of doing that? He said, "Well, I've gotten into these conversations with other people." He said, "And then they call up the shop and they say that they don't like the things that I talk about." And I said, "Oh, by all means, no." I said, I've loved our conversation. I said, and the fact that we don't, you know, we come at this from different angles. I can't quite remember exact words that I responded with, but I said, but that we come from this from different angles or different perspectives. I said, that's just fine. I said, you know, I respect you. I said, I've really gotten enjoy getting to know you better. And I think one of the hallmarks of relationships in our lives and relationships within the church need to be that, you know, you don't need to believe like me for me to want to be a part of you. You know, and that's really a kind of a critical juncture where the church is at. You know, you don't need to believe like us in order to belong with us. And these be true in our own life as well. Well, that's some of what Andrew taught us, young boy, a few loaves of bread, a couple of fish, and Jesus about friendships. But just for a moment then, what about Saul's life? Well, what Saul lets us know is that sometimes friendships can be messy. I don't think we said that in our little words, did we? But sometimes friendships are messy. And some of you know exactly what we're talking about. Paul had yet to get his name. Saul was a real piece of work. Saul was dangerous. Saul was responsible for Christians being beaten. Saul was responsible for Christians being imprisoned. Saul had the reputation of being this arch enemy, enemy number one against the Christians. Saul crossed Barnabas's path, and Barnabas stuck with him. Barnabas heard him out. Barnabas listened to him, and somehow in the midst of their interchange became convinced that indeed, in fact, maybe he wasn't even convinced. Maybe he was willing to take a risk in that friendship. And that was maybe a word that we didn't use either, that sometimes friendships require risk. Or maybe Barnabas thought, you know what, God took a risk by coming and giving his life for me. I'm willing to take a risk in giving my life to someone else. So think about friendships in the church, in your life. Think about how you can be a better friend. Think about how they're messy at times. And ultimately, you know, we too think about that God took a great risk to be our friend and to reach out to us. Gracious God, I'm reminded of the song, I have a friend, such a friend. And that friend is found in God. But every one of us can attest to the fact that, yeah, that's great, that's wonderful, but sometimes we need a friend with flesh on. And so we're thankful for those people who have come alongside of us, you know, seen us when our hair didn't look good and when we were disheveled, seen us at our very worst, when we were at the very angriest, ill-tempered, judgmental, you know, all of those negative words we can think of that we have been at one time or another, but yet they have stuck with us. We thank you for them. And it might it be our prayer that we will be that kind of friend to other people. Whether it's an Andrew story where we look to care for those who feel pushed aside by society, or whether we find ourselves toughing it out with someone whose life has just gotten messy. Lord, we're thankful that when our life was messy, you've never abandoned us. Bless us, O Lord, encourage us in our walk, and may we be an encouragement to others. In the name of Christ, we pray. Amen.